Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, March 11th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, some Humboldt County staff in fear of some supervisors, traffic stop leads to firearm arrests in Eureka, and it's official, Fortuna will be getting a community pool. So stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
A hostile work environment created by members of Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors was acknowledged as the board took up a finding against Supervisor Rex Braun. Daniel Mintz reports.
Reviewing a finding of hostile and abusive conduct toward staff by County Supervisor Rex Braun, other supervisors talked about how county employees are in the grip of fear caused by a broader pattern of intimidation. The power held by supervisors and how their behavior affects staff became a discussion point at the March 10th Board of Supervisors meeting. Supervisor Rex Braun acknowledged acting in what an investigative report describes as hostile and abusive conduct toward staff, but the board decided not to issue an official reprimand of him, an action known as a censure. But some supervisors have deep concern about how some members of the board interact with staff. Supervisor Natalie Arroyo related a discussion she had with a consultant who was hired to assess what county employees think of their work environment.
A couple of years ago, somebody who was working in a consulting capacity with the county and interviewing and working with a lot of department heads, who I won't name, said that a lot of department heads were scared of us. And I really, I like wanted to be sure I didn't mishear them. And I asked for elaboration. And this person reiterated that a lot of department heads have fear for themselves and their employees about how they may be treated in small group meetings in particular, but also when they bring things here before us. And I don't want to have that kind of culture within the county. So I think it's incumbent on all of us to try to, and I know we all have an open door policy and we all try to build relationships with staff in our own ways. And I don't know how to address that overarching sense of fear.
Arroyo added she's especially concerned because the fearful atmosphere was noted by a consultant who had interviewed many county workers. Bone's actions surround an online meeting with staff about the county's tobacco retail licensing ordinance. In objecting to the ordinance's prohibition of license transfers, Bone acted in what a written investigative report describes as a disrespectful and aggressive manner towards county employees. Braun read from a prepared statement, the first time he's ever done that, and said he was responding to concerns from constituents. Although he made some clarifications to a couple of the report's descriptions, Braun didn't contest its main finding.
I also want to clarify, to the best of my knowledge, that I did not direct profanity towards staff or use profanity about them. I did use a swear word in reference to myself. I apologize if I acted like an a-hole during the decision because I felt strongly about the topic at hand, being raised in a corner grocery store. However, I sincerely regret if my tone, delivery, caused anyone to feel uncomfortable or disrespected. I do apologize for that. Finally, I would like to thank Supervisor Madrone for bringing this matter forward to make me aware, and I appreciate the opportunity to reflect on the situation, and I apologize if anything I said or how I said it caused concern or hurt feelings.
This isn't the first time a supervisor has been called out for bad conduct against staff in recent times. Supervisor Michelle Bushnell has had two findings of hostile conduct against her. And while Board Chair Mike Wilson nodded to Bone's apology, He said it misses the main issue of power imbalance.
And I appreciate the apology that was given, but again, it was about, and what the words that I heard was, I apologize for the hurt feelings. And I think what we're talking about isn't just hurt feelings, but what staff feels is intimidation. That is different than hurt feelings. And I think we're trying to address that within the institution. And I appreciate Supervisor Arroyo's observation. And I think we've all heard, at least I have, from staff within the organization about feeling intimidated by people in power. That's us. And I want to be clear that that is really, to me, the core issue that we're talking about. Not hurt feelings, but people feeling intimidated that they can't do their jobs or have to adjust the way that they're supposed to do things based on their fear of retribution or whatever.
The matter was agendized by Supervisor Steve Madrone, who accepted Bone's apology and seemed satisfied that Bone has had a, quote, learning experience. Bushnell's motion to simply file the report without issuing a censure was seconded by Bone, and it was apparent that the four votes needed to do the censure weren't there. The motion was unanimously approved. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Monday morning, a vehicle was observed by a Eureka Police Department officer going 74 miles per hour in a 30-mile-per-hour zone, and a traffic stop was conducted. This stop was conducted as part of Operation Gateway 101, which is a proactive effort made by the Eureka Police Department to improve traffic safety along the U.S. Highway 101 corridor. The operation is in collaboration with City of Eureka Public Works, Code Enforcement, and other city departments. This specific traffic stop resulted in the arrests of 36-year-old Angel Barba of Reading and 25-year-old Caden Hendricks of Reading for firearm-related charges. KMUD News spoke with Laura Mantagna, Public Information Officer for the Eureka Police Department, for more information on the incident.
On March 9, 2026, at approximately 8:02 a.m., a Eureka Police Department patrol officer was conducting traffic enforcement on 4th Street near A Street when the officer observed a vehicle traveling at a high rate of speed. Using LIDAR, the officer obtained a reading of 74 miles per hour in a posted 30 mile per hour zone as the vehicle was passing multiple other vehicles. The officer conducted a traffic stop on the vehicle. The driver, identified as 36-year-old Angel Barba of Reading, was placed under arrest for reckless driving. Occupants of the vehicle stated there were firearms concealed under the center console. Officers conducted a search of the vehicle and located two semi-automatic pistols concealed under the front seat folding center console. Barbara was arrested and booked into the Humboldt County Correction Facility for felon in possession of a firearm, prohibited person in possession of ammunition, carrying a concealed weapon in a vehicle, carrying a loaded firearm in public, and reckless driving. Barbara's passenger, 25-year-old Caden Hendricks of Reading, was arrested and booked for carrying a loaded firearm in public and carrying a concealed weapon in a vehicle. This enforcement action occurred as part of Operation Gateway 101, a collaborative initiative involving the Eureka Police Department, Public Works, Code Enforcement, other city departments, and community partners. The program is designed to address traffic safety and quality of life concerns along the Highway 101 corridor, the city's primary gateway, ensuring a safe, welcoming, and well-maintained environment for residents, businesses, and visitors. While Operation Gateway 101 provides focused attention along this critical corridor, the Eureka Police Department continues to actively address crime, traffic safety, and quality of life concerns throughout the entire community. Citywide patrol operations, targeted enforcement efforts, community engagement, and investigative follow-up remain ongoing to ensure public safety across all neighborhoods in Eureka.
Individuals described should be presumed innocent until proven guilty. More information about Operation Gateway 101 can be found on the City of Eureka website. Last Tuesday, the Jean Lucas Community Center in Fortuna announced that plans for a long-awaited community pool are finally moving forward. The McLean Foundation, the nonprofit that helped fund the McLean campus that the community center is on, will be funding the project. Construction will be led by the ERV Community Center Foundation, which owns and operates the McLean campus in the Jean Lucas Community Center. KMUD News spoke with Lauren Carell, Vice President of the McLean Foundation, and the ERV Community Center Foundation for more information on the project.
So it has, again, like I said, it's been in the kind of the works for 60 years. It was originally part of, there's a special district through the city of Fortuna, and that had kind of gone dormant for a little bit. And it had recently become active again in the last 5 years. But again, it's a special district, but it garnered some interest in revitalizing the fact that our community actually needs a pool. And so we're looking around the local area, and there isn't any community pool here in the Fortuna, Ill River Valley area. You know, CR is closed down, Scotia's closed down. I mean, there are a handful up north, and some of them are, you know, through some private people. But we just don't have a pool here. And there's also an exceptional need for water safety. We have one of the highest drowning rates here in Humboldt County as opposed to all over California. And, you know, that can be prevented if the kiddos can have a place to learn how to swim. And so a lot of these different things kind of came into, you know, the board of the McLean Foundation and Dennis Scott, who runs it, and just kind of the pool has always been an idea. And now it's like no time like the present. And so if it doesn't get done now, then it probably will never get done. And our campus actually has the infrastructure. When it was designed to have a pool as part of this full complete build out of the campus. And so we right now are finishing up the designs of the pool, and we have done a lot of foundation testing and different things like that to determine what we can actually support on the site that it's going to be. It will be limited to 5 feet, but that only limits a competition pool. The rest of the stuff we can still do in a pool with a limit of 5 feet. And so there's no time like the present to do it. And the McLean Foundation is committed to doing it, committed to finishing up the design and the plans, and committed to building it. So, you know, why not?
Due to site limitations, the pool will be designed with a maximum depth of 5 feet. It will be designed to support swim lessons and water safety instruction, family recreation, low-impact exercise, youth and school programming, and more.
What we're looking at right now, and again, the design is, we're throwing around a couple designs. We don't want it to be super small, but we are limited to 5 feet deep. Of course, we live in Humboldt County. We live in, you know, earthquake country. And so in order to make it to stable and to be super deep, we would have to do what's called a deep foundation, which is like millions and millions of dollars, which is not feasible. And so with the special foundation, some sort of geo foundation, we can do it without doing a large amount of pilings and stuff like that. We can have a pool, but it has to be limited to 5 feet. So that'll be really wonderful and great for, that'll have lap swimming. It'll allow for swim lessons. It'll allow for physical therapies. It'll allow for, you know, family recreation and stuff like that. The design, what we would like to have is the concept of a natatorium that opens up to the air. So it would obviously, we have Humboldt County weather, but it would be an enclosed structure. But on those beautiful sunny days that we have in Fortuna, we could open up to the air in wonderful. It would help with operational costs and also just being able for people to enjoy our beautiful campus that we have here too.
There are tentative plans to break ground on this project by the end of the year, but there are still challenges that can be encountered before then. The community center is still working towards getting proper permitting for construction on the pool, and weather can play a factor in how quickly they can work on it.
So what we're really hoping is to, I mean, ultimately it's going to be the design and the permits are the big thing. We would like to, in an ideal world, break ground at the end of this year. That's what we would love to do. But again, you know, between permits and weather and stuff like that, we just don't know. But we're hoping to have it done, I mean, in the next couple years, should everything go, you know, as planned. It should be, I mean, once it starts breaking ground, there's really no stopping it.
The McLean Foundation has been awarding grants to nonprofits around Humboldt County since 2000. During this time, they have funded more than 1,140 grants for over 378 nonprofit organizations around Humboldt. Here's Carell with more.
So the McLean Foundation, so a lot of us in the Fortuna area, maybe some families and stuff, they know of Eel River Sawmills, which is a lumber company that was founded by Mel and Grace McLean, and they provided a lot of jobs for the local community through the lumber industry, 50s all the way to the late 90s. And then once Eel River Sawmills unfortunately dissolved, there were some people who decided that Mel and Grace had left this really large gift for the community, and so the Mel and Grace McLean Foundation was actually started in 1999, and they give away grants to the local community. I think the last time I ran the numbers, it was almost $20 million in grants that McLean has given to Eel River Valley and Southern Humboldt and a little bit up north, too, over the last 20 years. They purchased and built the community center that's behind Newburgh Park in Fortuna. That was over a $20 million project. And the community utilizes that all the time year-round. And then they gifted it to ERV Community Center Foundation, which was a separate, completely separate nonprofit, operating nonprofit that runs the campus and the Gene Lucas Community Center. And so while they're two completely separate nonprofits, we definitely work together in completing the vision that Mel and Grace wanted for the community.
Updates on the community pool project will be posted to the Gene Lucas Community Center's Facebook page at facebook.com/GeneLucasCenter/. In state news, California advocates press Congress to fund wildlife crossings. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
Congress is considering whether to renew a program that funds the construction of safe wildlife crossings in California and across the U.S. The culverts and overpass bridges help animals get past roads that block their migration in search of mates, food or water, and seasonal habitat. Mike Leahy with the National Wildlife Federation says the projects save the lives of animals and people alike by preventing collisions.
Wildlife vehicle collisions are a major problem. They cost annually over $8 billion, and they cause about 26,000 injuries and hundreds of deaths of humans.
A 2024 report from the UC Davis Road Ecology Center found the California Highway Patrol recorded more than 52,000 traffic incidents involving wildlife and recovered more than 162,000 wildlife carcasses between 2009 and 2023. The species most often hit include mule deer, black bears, mountain lions, coyotes, raccoons, and Pacific newts. California has dozens of projects in the pipeline, including one over Route 395 in Mammoth Lakes and another over the 118 freeway in Simi Valley. Beth Pratt, Regional Executive Director for the National Wildlife Federation in California, says the world's largest wildlife crossing will open at the end of this year, just north of L.A., built over the 101 freeway in Agoura Hills.
This wildlife crossing is unprecedented on many levels. It is in the most urban area where one's ever been done. And that 101 barrier was imminently driving the likely extinction of the local mountain lion population.
The $350 million Wildlife Crossings pilot program started in 2021. Both the House and Senate versions of the bill are awaiting action in congressional committees. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz defends state against GOP fraud allegations at House hearing, clashes with Republicans. KPFA's Kennedy Coelho reports.
Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota, along with Attorney General Keith Ellison, defended their efforts to crack down on fraud in the state. Both state officials were called to the House Oversight Committee as witnesses in a hearing on fraud in government programs in the state of Minnesota. Republican Congress members claim that they are putting politics first in order to protect Somali immigrants. There were moments of heated back and forth between the governor and members of the committee, including one with Republican Representative Nancy Mace of South Carolina. Mace used right-wing talking points to attack Walz's intelligence, to which he replied he did not want to be part of her political theater.
I hope you learned some lessons from your last hearing with me on the Oversight Committee. Have you learned anything since
then? I did, that if I didn't speak up, two of my people would be dead, Congresswoman, and I warned you.
Okay, Miss Governor Walz, what is a woman? Have you learned that lesson? Do you know what a woman is?
I'm the governor of Minnesota, Congressman.
Do you know what a woman
is? I'm not here to be your prop for your obsession.
So if you can't define what a woman is, you certainly can't define what fraud is. If you can't even define what a woman is, you can't define fraud.
The Somali community was brought up numerous times by Republicans. Minnesota has the largest Somali population in the country, with around 100,000 people. Republicans focused on this group, with representatives like Mace describing them as, quote, pirates, end quote. Republican Representative Pat Fallon of Texas brought a graph titled, quote, benefit or burden, end quote, regarding the Somali population. Republican Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio focused solely on the number of Somalis that have been arrested. Walls then engaged in back and forth with Jordan.
How many people have been indicted in your state right now? Do you know, Governor?
I don't have those numbers with me.
You don't? 98 people have been indicted. You'd happen to know how many are Somali American?
I don't. We don't investigate or prosecute people based on ethnicity, religion.
Neither do I. We shouldn't do that. But but Mr. Megan is a Somali American who just said that the core, one of the concerns was this is a core voting block. And I just want to know if you know how many of the 98 people have been indicted in your state are Somali.
Ranking Democrat Robert Garcia of California used his time to call out President Donald Trump's administration. He said that Trump does not care about fraud, adding that the truth behind the federal involvement is political retribution against the state of Minnesota.
If the president cared at all about fraud, we would not have all of these officers with all this illegal behavior on Minnesota streets. And we should remember that the Trump administration tried to use Operation Metro Surge as leverage to seize Minnesota's voter rolls. The Trump administration was never serious about addressing fraud in Minnesota. Instead, they've been interested in election conspiracy theories.
Governor Walz claimed that Trump has done nothing to help the investigations into fraud. He agreed with the sentiment that this is political retribution against him for not bending the knee to Trump. Walz called on Republicans to help, saying that he would gladly accept the resources Minnesota needs, namely attorneys, not enforcement.
We welcomed the Republican folks, the attorneys over at the U.S. Attorney's Office who were good at helping us as partners. We turned this over to them. They prosecuted. They put people in jail. They're not there now. There's nobody doing this. And I will remind this committee, the U.S. attorney was in front of a federal judge yesterday being threatened with jail because of what's going on in that office. And from my perspective, who's prosecuting trafficking, drugs, murder, and fraud? And so we want them. If you could do anything, Chairman, call the president and tell him to put some U.S. attorneys over there to prosecute fraud. I'll sign on with you.
Federal and state fraud investigations are ongoing. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Cuello.
In national native news, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs has invited tribal leaders to testify on Capitol Hill Wednesday. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, the Northeast Arizona Indian Water Rights Settlement Act is the hearing's subject.
This $5 billion deal would resolve claims for three parties, including the Navajo Nation and Hopi Tribe. For San Juan Southern Paiute President Carlene Yellowhair, this proposal is not just about securing precious water in the Southwest. If passed, it would also set aside 5,400 acres for a new reservation in Arizona.
We want to settle because we want our land, our home, a place to build.
We lost all our elders. They started it, and we just want to finish it.
The tribe has more than 300 members, including Vice President Johnny Lehi Jr.
You know, the land and the water, that's what we needed to become more sovereign.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
The Alaska Supreme Court heard arguments this month on whether prisoners can be forcibly medicated with psychiatric drugs without a court hearing and the right to a lawyer. In the state correction system, Alaska Native people are incarcerated about twice the rate of white Alaskans. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
The ACLU brought the case against the Department of Corrections on behalf of a prisoner, Mark Andrews. He says he's been unjustly drugged with powerful psychotropic medication for most of the last 7 years, without due process or access to legal counsel. The department policy currently allows prisoners to be drugged against their will if they are gravely disabled or are in imminent risk for harming themselves or others. Daron Levine is a lawyer for the ACLU. He argued at the hearing that the policy infringes on rights protected by the state constitution.
Few things are more personal than someone's body, and arguably nothing is more personal than a person's mind. It's the locus of a person's identity, and it's a last refuge of freedom for people who are incarcerated.
Under department policy, prisoners have the right to hearings every 6 months with department staff, and they have the right to appeal the decision to a department committee. The ACLU argues that Andrews didn't have sufficient access to hearings or an appeal. Here's Justice Jennifer Henderson questioning Kimber Rogers, the attorney representing the Department of Corrections. Justice Henderson says the facts seem to suggest that the prisoner was denied the rights promised in the department's policy.
How do you respond to that?
Your Honor, I agree that there were definitely some problems in Mr. Andrews' hearings, but I don't think that that supports...
It seems like there were more than some problems. There were long periods of time where there were no hearings, for example.
Well, Your Honor, I would dispute that, actually.
The ACLU lawyer argued that there should be a hearing in a courtroom because the Department of Corrections staff may be biased to protect the institution over the person. But Rogers says a hearing inside prison is the best approach. When the Supreme Court issues a ruling, the decision could apply to the approximately 22 Alaska prisoners who are being forcibly drugged. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
The National American Indian Housing Council is applauding the House passage of the Tribal Trustland Home Ownership Act. The bill to improve access to home ownership for Native families on tribal trustland is led by South Dakota Congressman Dusty Johnson and passed last week. Executive Director of the Housing Council, Rudy Soto, says the bill improves coordination between the BIA, lenders, and tribal communities, establishes timelines, and helps Native families, veterans, and tribal members who want to achieve home ownership. The Senate previously approved the measure, and it now heads to the president's desk. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Suzanne Potter, Kennedy Coelho, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMA News is online, and you can find us on KMA.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.